When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, this is Hart Bochner, and you're listening to $2 Late Fee. So listen up.
You know those guys who think they know everything about a movie without having to go on the internet to look it up? Well, that's us, but maybe only for the years 1981 through mid-1989.
No, I'd say late 1978 through early 1992. Either way, we know movies. And even more specifically, we know soundtracks from those movies.
Yeah, this is $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
This is the podcast where we pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it still holds up today.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Thanks for listening. On to the show.
This is America, Bill, so I want you to live it up, stud man. This is the last summer blast.
It's a fast life.
Great party, Bill.
Thanks.
It's a low life.
Who wants something?
I do, I do.
It's a high life. It's a wild life.
Hi, I'm Bill Conrad, and you are...
Not interested.
Don't get out of here right now. I'm going to scream.
You won't scream.
I'll scream.
You won't scream.
Now, from the creators of Fast Times at Ridgemont High, comes something even faster. They're doing it.
It's casual.
They're saying it.
It's casual.
They're living the wild life.
It's casual.
So, I got a question for you. Or a comment, I guess. No, it's more of a question. I got a question for you. If someone said to you, have a maple bar, brother, they're fresh. Do you think that would change your perspective on life? Do you think that would make... you felt like the world around you was crashing down, a maple bar would make life good once again?
I mean, at this point in time, I don't want to touch any food that anybody offers me or anything. So probably not. Okay. I played tennis this morning for the first time in 12 years or something.
Wow.
Cause my friend and neighbor was like, hey, you know, the courts are open and let's go play. Why am I saying this? Oh yeah. Just the point of like, well, number one, it was awesome. Cause just being out there in the world,
I bet,
exercising
yeah.
in that way. But just like, just like other people's tennis balls, you know, because there's a court next to us and like they're coming over. But I was just like, yeah, I don't want to touch other people's tennis balls, much less a maple bar.
First of all, did you have a sweater tied around your neck when you played tennis?
I had it tied around my waist.
Okay. Because I haven't played tennis since I was in high school and I still, I shouldn't stereotype. But I always, as a kid, I always associated tennis with the sweater tied around the guy's neck.
And is that because of a specific movie?
No, I think, I don't know.
Like I've literally never seen that in my entire life and on a human being, like in person.
Really?
But movies at the country clubs, you know, like the Underhills and like,
yeah, I think
Mrs. Stanwyck. I don't think he did.
Darwick.
I don't think Mr. Underwill had it, but it's like that kind of thing. It's like the buffery, like when they're doing a stereotype of the country club rich couple,
yes.
You know, or whatever. They're always, you know, like the Caddyshacks, the clearly the douchebag antagonist family.
Yes. I think that's where I got it from. I think Fletch might have had a sweater tied around his neck. And he had the tennis racket with the cover still on.
So there you go. Can I borrow your towel? I just hit a water buffalo.
I just love how he had the cover on his tennis racket and he was playing with the cover on the tennis racket. Yeah. Oh man,
yep.
we're going to have to talk about that movie one of these days. Maybe if we get Harold Faltermeyer on our show.
I mean, yeah, it's a great, yeah. I mean, that's, yeah.
But today.
It's in my top five.
today we're talking about a film that some people know about, many people don't know about. It's the 1984 cult classic, The Wild Life.
The Wild Life. Yeah, I would say more people don't know about it. It's very, it's, I mean, I'm like, it's very under the radar now, but it was very under the radar then. And certainly, despite being labeled and branded as the sequel to Fast Times at Ridgemont High, it didn't pay off. It didn't succeed. It didn't, as I'm banging into everything.
No, I think Cameron Crowe was, because Cameron Crowe wrote the screenplay for both films, they automatically tagged them together. At one point, developmentally, it was intended to be the sequel to Fast Times, but then it didn't go that route. The director was fired, and then they rehired another director to finish the film. So clearly it was marred with the typical Hollywood, bullshit that a movie goes through. But overall, yeah, and tonally, it's very different than Fast Times.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. This movie was directed by a guy named Art Linson, who is primarily known in his career as a producer. He produced a lot of big movies. Some hard-hitting movies like Heat, I know for a fact. I know for a fact he produced Heat. I don't have it in front of me.
I don't even have to look it up.
But he produced Fast Times and Fight Club.
Yep.
Huge movie.
And The Untouchables.
Yeah, also a huge movie. What was the TV? What was the TV show that I was thinking of? Sons of Anarchy. Most recently, Sons of Anarchy, which is a huge show.
Actually, and he's been in the business for forever, and his work on this film. It's not like you would say, oh, that's a John Carpenter movie. Oh, that's a Ivan Reitman film. This is, again, what would typically be just another buried 80s comedy. And it pretty much was buried. People, like you said, not that many people know about it. And unfortunately, one of the main reasons is because of the distribution with the soundtrack and the... Universal not wanting to pay rights to Eddie Van Halen or the other artists to put this thing out. That's why we have never seen a proper DVD release or a Blu-ray release. I think that's a criminal as far as movies that should be seen, because while this movie is flawed, and we'll definitely talk about that, it's got a lot of A quality actors in it. It's got an amazing soundtrack, and it's definitely a quintessential 80s movie, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, I'd seen this movie maybe twice in my life.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, it's not one that I've rewatched a lot. And up until you, surprising me with the wonderful DVD, it was like watching it for the first time, because honestly it's been 35 years or something, so watching it with those fresh eyes, I was like, okay, I definitely remember this, I don't remember this. So just from the for the basic over I have no words today no words at all nothing's making any sense The overall theme of this, the overall premise, is essentially, it's like, so you've got Eric Stoltz, who to me is the main character.
Yes, he is, unlike Fast Times, which had a bunch of main
multiple characters. Multiple stories. This is kind of like, we're seeing the movie through the eyes of Eric Stoltz's character named Jim.
Yep. No.
No.
His brother's Jim.
Jim is Wyatt.
Yes.
One thing I was going to say about this, and this just made me think of it. this is some of the most boring names in a movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Fast Times had really cool, like Spicoli and like, you know, yeah. I mean, Brad and like, you know, not like they're like cool names, but like here it's just like Jim and Tim and David. And it's just like every, you know,
yeah,
it's
Tommy.
Tommy. It's Tommy. Yeah.
And they're never really, and they're never unlike in Fast Times where Damone was Damone, but, and Rat was Rat, but Brad Hamilton and Jeff Spicoli, like a first and last name, right? This is
exactly,
just Bill. You know,
it's exactly,
you're right.
It's just like, hey, Bill. Hey, Tom.
Eric Stoltz.
Hey, yeah.
Eric Stoltz,
Eric Stoltz
Bill.
Is Bill. You know what I mean? Yeah. Right. Okay.
I will say though, too, it's the names are odd. The female names, Anita and Eileen, as two of the main.
Right. They got some decent love.
Yeah.
Leah Thompson and Jenny Wright, respectively. But I think, you know, I just think, yeah, so it's Bill, and Bill, you know, Bill's decided not to go to college after high school, and he's decided that he's going to experience life, and he's going to experience life by managing a bowling alley and getting his own apartment.
14 and, blocks. And big man.
And kind of, and kind of everything is seen through the eyes of that premise.
And he thinks, and he thinks he's so cool because he's going to be, he's a man now. He's no longer a teenager. And he thinks, and his brother, Jim, played by Elon Mitchell Smith, prior to Weird Science, mind you, you know, he's the younger brother, but in many ways he's kind of like seems more mature in the beginning of the movie, at least. But he gives his brother shit when he's getting ready to move out. And I love that when the mom is like using a camcorder, and this is quintessential 80s too, this giant camcorder, she borrowed it from the neighbors to use it for the first time, and she's filming his last goodbye, Bill says something like, oh, I'm only gonna be living 14 blocks away, and his brother says, oh, 14 blocks, big man, you're really taking off. I don't know why, but that's one of my favorite lines in the movie. It was when I was a kid. It still is now. I watched this movie when it came out on VHS with my brother. And I was a little guy, and he was 5 years older than me. And watching it again now, I'm realizing how much my brother wanted to be like the Tommy character in this.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Penn's character, Tom right. Drake. And really, in many ways, like a villain. He is a villain. Like he's a douchebag. But I guess a lovable douchebag. He's not lovable to me in any way whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really interesting point, because I wanted really hard to like him, and I never did. Because you realize like his intentions are kind of like, you know, he's not, I agree that he's a villain, but he's not a bad guy. He's just kind of like, this is sort of all he knows, and he's just trying to achieve that sense of like, you know, freedom and you know, like growing up quicker. Like when you're in high school, you just want to be 21, you know, you just want to be in college, and then you kind of hit 21 and you're like, all right, well, that was a lot of nothing really. But, but really like, yeah, I, you know, for me, it's like Tommy is just that guy. He's just like a fuck up. He just keeps fucking up no matter what anyone says to him. But at the same time, it's like he's like a lovable fuck up. So he's like, oh, but Tommy, oh, you know, like he's trying to get back together with his girlfriend, Eileen, who like doesn't like him really because he keeps letting her down. But then, you know, yeah, she just comes around. It's just Tommy, you know, he's just so lovable despite, you know, hooking up with other girls and all these things. I think one of the first ways we're introduced to Tommy, Chris Penn's character in this movie, is like when he's in that convenience store and he's going to buy some booze and things. And
first 5 minutes of the movie,
right? Yeah. And the convenience store guy's like, oh, you're like, for everyone in town knows who Tommy is, which is like really hilarious. Cause he's like a world champion. He's like a all state wrestler.
Yeah.
In high school. So everyone like knows him. He's like legendary, but it's really funny in the sense that wherever he goes, he's trying to like be somebody. It's always like when he's trying to like show a fake ID and they're like, hey man, we know you, you're the wrestler. So in this case, the convenience store's owner's like, "Oh, I know you. You're clearly in high school, and you know this girl." And he's like, "Oh yeah, I boned her in the, you know," whatever he says, he's really offensive. And then this guy's like, yeah. The convenience store guy's like, "Oh, that's my sister." And he's like, "Oh, no, you said that name. I meant that name." And you're like, all right.
Did you recognize the convenience store clerk?
No.
As Dean Devlin?
Mm-mm.
One of the writers of Independence Day and also in Real Genius as one of the nerds?
Nope, I didn't.
And so I automatically recognized him. And yeah, he's so pissed off.
Why did you lead with one of the writers of Independence Day? That was such a... That's
I think because I
right?
think
I mean Real Genius, of course. Yeah, I totally get you there. But like, you didn't recognize him as one of the writers of Independence Day?
Well, no, because him and the guy who directed Independence Day, Roland Emmerich.
Oh God.
Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin disaster. Were partners together.
Okay, so
and
got it. All
they
right.
did like they did Godzilla together. They did The Day After Tomorrow. They did
the asteroid movie. The other movie.
Yeah, like Dean Devlin for a hot minute was one of the top blockbuster guys, and I remember seeing interviews with him, and I'm like, that's the kid from Real Genius. I don't recognize him as the writer.
That's very funny.
And then when I see him in this first 5 minutes, where Chris Penn is like, just coming off as a major douche, like, "Hey, I slept with you." When the clerk reveals that it's his sister, he's like, "Oh yeah, no, I'm thinking of somebody else." And I'm like, "Wait, oh, that's the same guy. That's cool. Okay." And there's another Real Genius connection later on in the movie, but we'll get to that later. I want to see if you pick up on it.
Okay, fascinating. What were we talking about? Establishing Tommy as a douchebag.
Yeah, Tommy is the quintessential douchebag. You're right. He's not a villain, but I was thinking as this movie goes along, if this was, you know how people mash up trailers and make it, you know, they'll take the Shining trailer and make it a comedic movie, or they'll take, right? If you were to twist this into a darker thriller, this would be Hand That Rocks the Cradle or Pacific Heights, one of those kind of thrill, like I'm moving in. And there's nothing you can do about it. Unlawful entry, you know?
It's so true.
If you turn this into a drama, it would be, you know, Bill Conrad wants to make a name for himself until Tommy comes along and moves in. And Tommy destroys his life, really. Destroys the life he thinks he wants. Ultimately, it's not the life he probably does want. You know, all in the comedic sense. It's so, and it's light. You know, it has an ending where nothing really gets wrapped up. It's just more like I felt in many ways this would have made a great television pilot, because it sets up all these very potentially colorful characters, right? And I would love to see a series where all the characters unfold and especially Elon Mitchell Smith's character Jim, where he's such a dark, hard ass angry kid in the beginning, and then has his kind of coming to Jesus via seeing his idol shooting up heroin in a bathroom and which changes his whole dynamic on life. I would love to see more of that. I feel like this movie really plants the seeds for cool dynamics. It's not just for promotion of our upcoming interview with Hart Bochner, one of the stars of this movie as well. But I feel like Hart Bochner's character, which is David, and those of you that don't know Hart Bochner, he was Ellis in Die Hard. That's what he's mostly known for. But he has an entire resume that is very well stacked of films, and he plays this cop who is, for lack of a better term, banging Leah Thompson's character, Anita, who happens to be Bill's ex-girlfriend. And he has sex with her at the donut shop, Donut City. And that's pretty much the only time he interacts with her through the entire movie. But he has a really good comeuppance. One of the few characters that has a good comeuppance at the end, in my opinion.
Yeah. In reference to Jim, Alan, I just want to call him Wyatt. I just want to call him Wyatt from Weird Science.
Seriously.
But he, so his character, which you sort of alluded to, is really obsessed with like kind of war, and he's, you know, he's always wearing camouflage pants, and he's like, you know, he's got an older buddy, as you said, an idol, played by Randy Quaid, who is a Vietnam vet. And like, so yeah, the character is just kind of like obsessed with war, and like kind of just this sort of defiant, you know, at the same time, he's like defiant to the man. Like you couldn't see him going to military school necessarily, because he just doesn't give a shit. You know, he's like,
no,
smoking a cigarette. He's, the first thing we see with him is he blows up, the very first scene in the movie, blows up the statue out front on the school's front lawn there.
But his upcoming high school that he's going to go to, because he's like, it, what, 13 at the time or something?
13, 14, yeah, right? Yeah. Transitioning from middle school. And the whole movie, as an aside, it kind of takes place that last week of summer leading up. Yeah. So there's a lot of like, the clock is ticking, what are we going to do? But this is kind of a dark perspective. But the thought I had when it comes to this character is basically that if this were today, that would be the character that'd be shooting up a school.
Yes, like, I agree.
He would, you know, like, and it made me feel so uncomfortable, because obviously, like, in 84, when this movie came out, that wasn't really a thing. Kids weren't shooting up schools. As crazy as that is, you don't remember that time.
No, and glorifying war during that time was kind of a cool thing to do. Like, everybody, was such a big thing to wear like camouflage pants and go to the Army Navy surplus and get the gear that all the soldiers would wear. I was a part of that.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
I watched a shit ton of G.I. Joe and I thought, oh, I wore camel pants. And I remember there's a line in the movie too, where Jim is, I almost called him Gary, not Wyatt, but Gary.
Right. Gary, Wyatt, whatever. I mean,
he's at the bowling alley and he's wearing his camel pants and he's hitting on this girl that he has clearly has a crush on, that is around the same age. And someone says to him, you know, like, nice Halloween costume or something like that.
Yeah.
And I just remember, that was the other thing too, that really struck with me about that time. You're right. Violence was not how it is now. If a kid was acting and doing the things that he did then, now he would have been flagged the second he started cranking up his, you know, Jimi Hendrix music.
But
that line when the kid's like, you know, hey, nice costume. There was such a stereotype too about like, you know, oh, you can't wear that. You're not a soldier. You can't wear camouflage pants, which is not, nowadays people do it and who cares? It's not a big deal. But it was the same thing with like, if you wore a sports jersey of a guy, oh yeah, well tell me all the things Michael Jordan's done with his life versus just being a fan of something, you know, enjoying something for what it is. Like, you had to validate why you were wearing what you were wearing. And I'm speaking personally because that shit happened to me all the time.
Right. Well, I do think it's geographic too, because it's, you know, if you grow up in the redneck South or whatever, you know, like everyone's camoed because everybody hunts. So it's not even a thing. And that's kind of always how it's been, historically. So, you know, so I think that this movie's taking place in Southern California. So there's a little bit of like, you know, where's the war, buddy? There, you're standing next to palm trees or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Where's the war?
Yeah. So, I do kind of see that too, because I agree. Yeah. Like that, it was very common, I think, for a lot of kids to wear camo where I grew up in New Jersey, but also at the same time, it wasn't like everybody was doing that.
No, and I think, yeah, if you were wearing certain outfits, you were automatically stereotyped as being a certain type of kid, right? You're a metal kid, or you're a stoner if you had long hair and wore a leather jacket or whatever. But going back to what you were saying earlier about the school shooting thing, yeah, Gary Gary was, or Jim. Damn it.
It's
damn
just,
it.
Jim is just, I don't know. It's like a boring name to say. No offense, Jim Walker, but like, I don't want to say it. I don't want to, you know.
No offense, James.
Bill, Jim, Bill, Tom.
You're right. No, wait,
Tony,
you're right,
Harry,
though.
Bobby. It's like, I don't know. I don't know.
But I was going to say, too, was that you know, he's one bad move away from turning into a darker character.
Yes.
If it wasn't for the fact that, and Randy Quaid does, he has like a 2-minute scene, a little cameo. It shows again what a great actor Randy Quaid is, and it's too bad he went down the crazy train route.
Yeah.
But so effective in portraying what like a Vietnam vet really is versus Rambo. Well, I would say Rambo Part 2, but First Blood is First Blood's more realistic because he comes home and he just wants to be left alone and isolate himself. And then Part 2 is like suddenly becomes the cartoon character that many people love. But yeah, he's the reality of war, and Jim wants to show him off to his buddy, right? Oh, look how cool my friend is. Well, actually, he doesn't even want to go by there. His friend's like, come on, take me through the whole movie.
Right. Sissy Charlie. It's like, Charlie.
Yeah, Sissy Charlie.
He's very private, Charlie.
And when he finally does, Charlie's disturbing. And then he catches Charlie shooting up heroin in the bathroom. And that's the shift where Jim, who does have a head, goes, oh, shit, that's not cool. And that's his story arc where he changes. And at the end of the movie, he's not wearing camo anymore. He's wearing plaid because, you know, that's what normal kids wear in the 80s, plaid.
Right. That's your standard 80s kid garb. Says he's on the straight and narrow on the way.
But this movie, though, outside of that character, and I know you mentioned it earlier, Jenny Wright, and I said Leah Thompson, this movie has so many great actors in it. From Jenny Wright. I mean, I recognize Jenny Wright from like Near Dark and a lot of horror films, actually. Lawnmower Man, and she was in a movie called I, Madman with Clayton Roeder. Bunch of kind of quirky, darker films. And in this, she plays like a really sweet character. And
yeah.
And then Leah Thompson, who plays Anita. Yeah, she's the ex-girlfriend of Bill, and she's seeing the David the cop at the donut shop, and and it's kind of interesting that she has a relationship with Eric Stoltz in this. And then later on, a couple years later, they're in Some Kind of Wonderful together.
It tripped me out actually a little bit. That is like that. I had a moment, yeah, where I was like, wait a minute, because the dynamic is so the dynamic, and then to think too that Eric Stoltz was the original Marty McFly.
He would have played her mom,
right? There would have been this epic, like Eric Stoltz, Leah Thompson. I'm glad he didn't, but yeah.
Well, it is interesting that in this, when he realizes that Anita is dating a cop, an older cop, he gets jealous and he wants to get back together with her. And she doesn't want to get back together with him because she's had her first orgasm because of David. And she thought that only happens when he turned 25 or something like that.
Right.
And then, but then Bill, like his character Bill is totally different than his character in Some Kind of Wonderful, but they're both pining for Leah Thompson's character. Difference being in this one, he gets back together with
Anita. Right. Well, he had broken up with her. So
yeah,
her, you know, I'm kind of on her side. Like
you broke up
with me. Like, yeah. But I didn't think you'd be dating all of America. Or something like that.
I love how he says that. He confronts her at the donut shop and he's pissed off because she's dating one guy. And I don't blame her at all, man. Like,
no,
she's one of the characters I have the most sympathy for in this movie because she's in love with Hart Bochner's character, David, the cop, and he's cheating on his wife and he has a kid. I mean, that was obvious from the get go. And his wife, by the way, played by,
Nancy.
Tamara Crowe's wife, Nancy Wilson, right? Who I hadn't seen since Fast Times, obviously, too. But yeah, she's the one who's, for lack of a better term, is like getting dicked around, you know? She's yep. getting cheated on, and Bill's jealous. And Bill's character is like, I get his character too, man. Like, he just wants to be, he wants to escape high school. I hated high school. I hated that whole experience. I think I've said it on other episodes. I totally understand where he's coming from. He just wants to be his own man. I think I wanted to move out around that same age. But then he realizes soon enough that life is pretty damn hard at that age, working at a bowling alley, wanting to live in a nice apartment complex, even though the apartment itself was a piece of crap.
yeah.
And, you know, his whole world, his whole world changes as the movie unfolds. And then he gets, you know, a horrible roommate in Tommy. But, yeah, I mean, that's outside of those characters. You've got Rick Moranis, who plays Harry. It's Eileen's boss at, what was the name of their place? It was called like Fashion Galaxy. That's right. Fashion Galaxy. Yeah. And he's got a great, little bit in the film. And then
he's got amazing, by the way, hair.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. The hair. So good. So yeah. good. I love how he, like, he kind of plays that same sleaze ball that he played in Ghostbusters. He played in Streets of Fire. It's kind of a mashup actually between his Streets of Fire character, who was like overly cocky and compensating, and then his Ghostbuster character, who was very meek and quiet, but was still kind of like hitting on the girl. It's right. You took those two characters, you put them together, you get Harry, who is like this meek idiot who thinks he's really cool.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, I just kind of love those characters of like, you know, I'm the manager of this store, and this is probably about as far as I'm going to go in life.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to manage this store forever. And just kind of putting all these weird responsibilities on Eileen. Like, there's a shoplifter, you better take her down. You know, she's like, what? Like nobody, you know, like we've all kind of been in those shitty jobs where you're like, you have responsibility for things you just don't care that much about. You know, like, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, at a certain point, it's like, am I really going to tackle a shoplifter for this store? You know,
I did.
You did?
When I was at Tower Records. Yeah.
Swear because like your boss, your creepy boss or whatever was like, oh, not the, this is the different place though, right? This is not the.
No, but it's interesting. He wasn't a creepy boss.
Wait, well, who are we talking about though? Is this the boss at Tower Records?
This is now my boss at Tower Records. Is a guy named Arlo, and Dustin, like, to go from Robert at Video Man.
Right.
Can I tell your tie-in for you? To Arlo Sellers, and this is how he would always introduce himself. I'm Arlo. I'm from Missouri, the show me state.
Oh, what? It's weird.
I became the assistant manager at the video department at Tower Records, and he put me in charge of buying all the adult movies there. He's like, you have experience with these movies from Video Man. I think you're going to be the right guy to choose the movies. So I'd sit in a room, in a back room with a catalog, circling the movies that I thought Tower Records used to have an adult section.
Oh my God. So this is how you and Corey bonded, right? Over adult movies.
I'm sure it was in some odd way. Yeah. But the other side of that is like, I was really kind of grossed out about all this. Cause this is not me. This is not
right.
I want to make the end caps with the art department. And I want to come up with like, I would do, it's funny on our Instagram page. And if you're not on there, you should follow us. You know, doing the birthday posts once a month, I do featured birthdays and like, come on, let's put all the movies up of the people that have birthdays this month and give them $2 off. No, I want you to buy all the porn for the store. Okay. So can I make an end cap for The Crow with like a Brandon Lee tribute and all the movies that might have influenced it? No, we want you to look for the new.
Right. This is funny. So you're trying to like do anything creative that you can do within that role. And he's just like, no, buy the the adult movies. Okay, so quick question. So is assistant manager, is that a full-time position?
Yeah, I was full-time. I was full-time at Tower Records.
You were full-time at Tower Records.
I had benefits and everything.
You had a little staff under you,
yeah,
I imagine.
I did.
And so when it came time, just to get back to this shoplifting story,
yes,
did you see this go down and you were just like, well, this is my job and I'm going to do it? Did somebody report it to you? Did the manager see it? Like, lay that out for me.
So, tackling somebody. Yeah, I was, working the register, and then would go off the register to kind of restock the floor, right?
With the adult movies or just regular movies?
The regular movies.
Okay, so you were allowed to do the regular sometimes.
Yeah, eventually I graduated from the dirty, danky depths of debutantes. Okay. I proved myself when I would go to Arlo's house and for martini night and play games. And that's a whole other story. He was a good guy, though. I spotted a dude.
Say whatever you want.
I spotted a dude, and we had undercover security in our shop. And I mentioned it to security, and they're like, okay, well, immediately security was like, okay, well, you go to the left around the counter, around the island, and I'll go to the right, and we'll kind of flank them.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Okay, so you were not planning to be involved in the takedown. Okay.
Got it. And then when the guy spotted us, he bolted and ran out the store, and we both ran after him, and I caught up to him and I grabbed him. I said, look, man, come on. You don't want to do this. Just drop it. And he dropped all his shit, and the security guard grabbed him and brought him in, and he had a couple CDs or whatever and maxi singles. I don't remember specifically what he had, but I remember at that time thinking like, oh shit. It was kind of a Brad Hamilton moment from Fast Times where I was like, right. Way to go.
Yeah. You're involved in you're like a vigilante of sorts at that point. So you didn't question it because it just happened kind of so fast. And then the guy was like, all right.
No, and it's not like Eileen where she's like, I got a lot of stuff to do right now. And I really don't want to do this. And
well, it's just like, yeah, it's just not really you know what I mean? Like, it's not really your response. I mean, it is your response, but it's not really,
especially if
there's a security team, like, why are you involved? And also you're much faster than the security team, clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. That was funny too. Cause I'm like, how come I'm the one doing all this? And I felt really good. After that I was like, oh yeah, I got my picture on the employee of the month board and,
Yeah. Well, you better at that point. You save them probably $10 of merchandise at least, you know?
Oh yeah. Look, they're already raping people of money anyways at that store. So,
right.
I love how people are like, oh, Tower Records is so great. They were not so great. Their prices were like $17 for a CD when other people were charging 10.
Yeah.
And it was outrageous. They were not so great.
No, right. So that's kind of what I'm saying. It's like, why do you, I don't know. It's just like a lot of work. You're chasing somebody down in the street,
It was adrenaline, man.
Yeah.
I mean, at
that point too. And you have backup, I don't know, if the guy does turn on you, does pull a knife or something, you're at least somewhat. How old was the thief, by the way? Was it a child or like a?
Oh, he was a teenager. And I was I think I was 19 or 20 at the time. I was Bill's age, so I thought I was so cool that I've got this full-time job at Tower Records,
right.
And I'm living in an apartment in Sunnyvale and a studio apartment with my, with my cool posters on the wall that are framed, because the minute you frame a poster, even if it's a movie poster, you're legitimized. You're no longer a teenager.
It's very different than just like putting it up with Funtac, that blue shit that you put it on. It kind of leaves a mark on your wall, a little greasy spot on your wall.
And I think going back to Eileen at Fashion Galaxy, when Harry calls her on the phone and he's like, hey, you got to get that shoplifter. And she's like, can you do it? Cause I'm really kind of busy right now.
Yeah.
And then she gets screwed over by her boyfriend. And that is one of the harshest scenes, or is it the scene right after that with them where he goes to propose to her? And that scene always stands out to me, by the way, where he gives her the ring box and she opens it up and it's empty.
Yeah.
And her reaction, there's two moments in that scene. Her reaction when she looks at and realizes it's not there, it is so believable, of like utter disgust.
Yeah.
And then when she smacks him, because I rewound that scene a couple times. She smacks him and he's so surprised. And it was a moment where I'm like, I wonder if that was scripted. Probably was, but his reaction is so great because he doesn't expect it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, yeah, I feel the female protagonist in this movie, I have a lot of sympathy for. Eileen's a good girl. She just wants a decent guy. And Anita's the same way. She wants a guy that will treat her right.
That's a good point. I mean, when we talked about Fast Times, one of the things that stood out to me in our discussion at that point was that, you know, there weren't a lot of scenes with the girls that weren't talking about their ultimate goal being to get with a guy, or, you know what I mean? Like, it was all about like all the girls' scenes, Stacy and, you know, Jennifer Jason Leigh, like everybody's just talking about, like, you know, like it's just like the, like sex with older boyfriends or whatever it was, yeah. But there was nothing really beyond that. But then when you also look at the male characters in that movie too, it's like this, it's really, yeah, that was kind of the same thing too. It's like, there's not really a lot of substance. And this movie probably has a little more substance too. Although I feel like Leah Thompson is just always kind of like debating like what to do, the next steps with David, you know, the next steps with Hart Bochner. Like, what should I do? He doesn't like when I call him, or he doesn't like when I show up, or he doesn't like anything. I don't know why he would tell her where he lived to begin with, or maybe she found out separately. You know, if you don't want your teenage mistress showing up,
well,
your house.
Probably is in the Yellow Pages at this point. Oh, yeah. Right? Probably, because it's not look like he's up. A public figure.
That's true.
But you're right. Yeah, she kind of hems and haws, and he's such a good sleazeball. I mean, we talked about that in our interview with him, and
I think the fact that he has a mustache in this too is like awesome. You know, it's a creepy '80s. It's like a pedophile mustache. You know, what we call a quote unquote pedophile mustache, like just that,
or porn star stash, right?
Right, but porn star was later. Like when you were in the '80s, we didn't call it that.
No,
you know what I mean? Like we were like, oh, that's you know, you'd be like, that's the unmarked van mustache. Like that's the, you know. You don't.
But
talk,
I will say,
you don't talk to that mustache. You see a guy like that, you don't talk to a guy like that in the '80s. Cop
have you
or
ever,
no cop.
Have you ever known a guy with a mustache like that?
Not during that time period, obviously, but because I was just a little child and I didn't know any adults with that mustache. But
that's good. That is good.
Yeah, but later, you know, I've had friends that have dabbled with that mustache, but then you're like, really, how much can this mustache sustain outside of the gay community? Really? Like when you say porn star, it's actually, yeah, that mustache is hugely popular with gay men.
It is so. True, because doing research for doing research for Hart Bochner, you'll be surprised with all the love that he gets online from certain communities.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
I'll leave it at that.
Are you doing a separate? Did you do a secret Clayton Rohner interview? By the way,
Clayton Rohner is always a guy.
You're always researching him.
We will get him on the show. You know, you very well know, but everyone that's listened knows that I have a lot of love for Clayton Rohner. It's a lot to love. Like that's why I brought up I Madman, because I just wanted to be able to name drop him.
Yep.
And there were quite a few cameos in this movie too. By the way, besides Randy Quaid. Ben Stein has a cameo as the manager of the Surplus City. That's really funny. And then I don't know if you recognize the
casting
bouncer.
Against type, I should say. Casting against type.
Very true. Yeah, very true. Did you recognize the bouncer at Leigh Girls, the strip club that they go to in the movie?
I did not.
That's Harry from Harry and the Hendersons, and also Predator. He played the Predator.
He plays Bigfoot in Harry and the Hendersons?
Yep, sure does. His name...
And how would I recognize that?
You know why? Because, I don't know, I know for myself at the time, I was
His
watching
name is
a
Kevin
of,
Peter Hall, looks
yep,
like.
Kevin Peter Hall. And he was on... I watched so much Entertainment Tonight back in the day. And I remember seeing interviews with him... when Predator 2 came out, or Predator 1, and just promoting, you know, you might not recognize his face, but you'll recognize his size.
Amazing.
I'm like, ooh, that's really an interesting play on words.
He played a lot of monsters, looks like.
He did, because he's a really big dude.
Yeah.
The guy was like, I think, almost 7 feet tall. And
but Predator's huge, yeah.
Yeah, and he's got a great great little cameo where he... That's a scene in the movie where Chris Penn, Tommy's character, wants to have a stag party because he's going to get engaged slash married to Eileen, which he's definitely not. He lies through this whole thing. He's such a liar. He's such a boaster. Yes. And everything he says is a lie. And we're going to get to It's Casual in a minute as well. But everything he says is a lie. And he goes to the strip club. And Ken Peter Hall is the bouncer. You know, don't touch the women. And of course he does. And that unloads a whole barrage of battles that goes on in that. But what, two of Tommy's buddies, one of them is Michael Bowen, who was an 80s staple as well. It featured in like Valley Girl and a personal favorite of mine, this movie called Amazing Grace and Chuck. Mm-hmm. And Iron Eagle, of course, with the famous, infamous race scene in the beginning between the motorcycle and the plane. He's one of the buddies. And so I love it. People are like, oh, this movie features Eric Stoltz, Chris Penn, and Michael Bowen, Quentin Tarantino staples. And I'm like,
right.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean,
I don't want to derail us here, but I just looked at Kevin Peter Hall. Did you see this tragic death that he had?
You want to tell everybody about it?
I just want to talk to you about it. I don't
bring
know if
everybody
keep
down.
I
remember when he died. It was
my
a big
God,
deal.
This is horrible. Yeah. So major car accident during surgery, received a contaminated blood transfusion that was AIDS positive.
Yep.
And died of AIDS. That is horrible.
Fun fact. No, I'm just kidding. Is that your
That's it. That's all
it's,
I got.
It's crazy.
Sorry,
it's
crazy.
It's horrible. And it's one of those moments where you're like, that should not have happened.
No.
You think about like tragic actors that you know about who died way too young from diseases. I think about the girl from the Poltergeist movies who she had a like an autoimmune disease, right? Or something like that. And she died, like basically knew that she was going to die at an early age.
Oh God.
You know, but this, yeah, Ken Peter Hall to be,
that's horrible
to go out that way. Yeah. It's horrible. And he was, I would have liked seeing more of him on screen minus the costumes because he was really charismatic.
Yeah.
So that's our fun this day in history moment. Yeah,
that,
brought to you by Dustin Rubin.
That might I might move that because that's not consistent with my branding, but it's really your thing.
It's really my thing. We just track my just put my name on that.
Yeah.
I was gonna say too that. Did you recognize the landlord at the apartment complex? You recognize him from anything else?
Well, that guy's fantastic, and I'll tell you, he's in Boogie Nights, right?
Yeah, that's what I know him from.
Yeah, that guy. I can't think of his name, but he
his name is Robert Wrigley, by the way. Robert Wrigley. He played the Colonel in Boogie Nights.
Oh my God. Colonel, yeah, he's just so good. But I think you know, again, as a scumbag, like he's just one of those, like he's a scumbag. Because he's just very good at it. When Chris Penn's character moves in with Eric Stoltz, at that point it was really making me uncomfortable as a viewer, disrespectful Chris Penn was of this place. And at first I was like, well, why didn't you just like, you didn't really like interview him that well. You just said like, come on in and move in. And then he's coming in and he's like, I'm taking the large room. This is what stood out to me, right? Chris Penn goes in and he's like, I'm in the big room. Eric Stoltz has already moved in. It's his place.
Yeah.
And they're flipping a coin for the big room. And I'm just like, Nope. I already hate this.
Totally.
He's disrespecting. You know what I mean? You don't move into somebody's place. And then, you know, obviously he's written that way and he's supposed to be, but we're supposed to like side with Tommy, you know, like you're like, no.
Yeah.
No.
Do you think we are? Do you think that was the intention? Like we were supposed to look at that and go, ha ha ha. Yeah. He got him on the heads and tails loss.
I don't think so. I think we're supposed to just be like, this is the first sign of trouble.
It totally is. Yeah. And I think they have an argument when they go into his room, which is really funny. It's off camera. They both go into the bedroom and they're, And he's like, this is my room. Bill goes, you know, this is my room. Well, I moved in here first. Yeah. And Tommy starts yelling at him. And he sounds like a little baby. Like, he sounds like a little kid having a tantrum. Yeah. And I think that's the first example of Tommy is this, he's a stunted kid.
Yeah.
And at the end, when they have their big rager and his dad shows up, who, that's actually his dad in real life, by the way.
No kidding.
Chris and Sean's real dad.
Wow.
And grabs him by the hair to pull him out of the house or whatever. And it shows that he's like this man child, which unfortunately I think we all know all too well. Everyone has a man child in their life where they're just like, dude, you
whether
need to
grow
up.
Whether it's your president or like whether it, you know, just, I mean, just off the top of my head, I'm just not, no, I'm not saying, I'm not, you know, naming names, but like, you know, it's like the president of the United States. It's just like a man child.
With funny hair, with funny colored country. Hair.
Yeah, you know, let's just say, for example.
But I would say that Tommy's in much better shape than our current tenant of the Oval Office. So,
but when they bust through that wall, you know, we need more space, and they just bust through in this port. I'm just like, oh, this would make me so crazy.
Dude, it made me so crazy, and that was the moment where I'm like, this is a perfect thriller. You could make this movie into a very dark drama. Speaking of those, that sequence, by the way, that big party, there's two cameos as well. One being Sherilyn Fenn in a very funny scene where, again, her part that's written for her, I think, is a strong part because she doesn't give in to Tommy's shit. In fact, part of me is like, well, why did you go into a closet with this guy if you're not going to want to make it with him? However, she doesn't, you know. But it's a funny exchange. And then Ron Wood from the Rolling Stones is
Ronnie
goes
Woods
into
is there. Yeah,
Ronnie, you know, just some random cameo.
Yep.
But totally. speaking of musicians and kind of segueing into the soundtrack of this movie.
Great. Good segue.
I just wanted to say you know, Eddie Van Halen did the score for this film. And that's one of the reasons why it's not available anywhere, because something to do with license rights. He scores this movie. And outside of Brian May from Queen, who did Cloak and Dagger and The Quest, which is a unique 80s kid movie, also starring Henry Thomas. Look those both up, by the way. Those are really good. Yeah, I couldn't think of any other rockers, quote unquote, that scored a movie, prominent rockers. At that time. And then, you know, Eddie Van Halen, 1984, Van Halen was quite possibly at the peak of their popularity at that moment with David Lee Roth, which is funny because they hadn't had Sammy in the band yet, but there's a scene in the movie where Eileen and Anita are laying down on the bed, and we'll post it on our Instagram as well. And we posted about it on our Instagram as well. There's an album which in between them, and it's a Sammy Hagar, Neil Sean record.
Your favorite.
That they did together. Yeah. And I'm like, oh shit, I know that record. Fun fact. So there you go. Anyways, Eddie Van Halen did the soundtrack for the movie. I think when we do all our episodes on one specific song, I think this is one where we might say the score itself is the soundtrack that will song that we'll talk about.
Yeah.
Because the score itself is phenomenal. Like,
yeah, there's, right, absolutely. No, I was just gonna say, there's just a ton of songs in this movie that were just like kind of like top 40 hits that they just used.
Yes.
You know, we're from Huey Lewis to Madonna,
Bananarama
to the Born to Be Wild song, which I hate so much.
And I also have to point out too, unfortunately, the DVD that you have and I have doesn't have those songs on it, with the exception of a couple. That is, Universal put out this Vault series, which is basically like buy the movie on demand from the studio, which is so weird. And then when they released it, they still hadn't gotten the licensing rights for a lot of those songs, Madonna, Huey Lewis. So they put the movie, they put other songs on there, like Little Richard and another kind of like doo-wop 50s song in the strip club specifically, because there's supposed to be a Madonna song playing in that scene, and it's not. And so the Vault series DVD that we have is just like, it's like putting in a VHS tape. It just goes straight into the movie. There's no menu. Right. There's nothing. Right. Unfortunately, that's the way this copy is. We need that real version. Really do, because the soundtrack is phenomenal. Eddie Van Halen's score is great. You can't even find that anywhere. Like, you can go on YouTube and you can find rips of the album versions, but then whoever the recorded those, you can hear the warps in the record, or a skip. Unfortunately, Eddie Van Halen was, I dare say, the greatest guitarist of the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, the greatest artist of that time, and for what he did, hard rock. I think nowadays he would be maybe open to releasing a version of this, because the score, so I don't know if you recognize, one of the songs in the movie was also used in Back to the Future, when Marty goes to see his dad and puts his whole outfit on, like his sci-fi looking thing, and pushes the play on the cassette recorder.
Darth Vader.
That song is in this movie too, when Tommy goes to visit Eileen at her house. He goes in through a window, and she's like, if you don't leave, I'm going to scream, and she does, and the music rips. Same piece. And then something that I would say doesn't need to be appreciated, but needs to be questioned, is slang terms. Because I feel like this movie... Two things. Before we get into slang terms. One, there is an insane amount of smoking that goes on in this movie. Every single character, with the exception of one or two, smokes throughout the... And my also underage smoking. Like, I'm not a prude, but I definitely say do not smoke. Just do not. It's shitty. You're bad for you.
In front of the cop. Like, your cop's... Yeah.
I know, it's a great scene with...
smoke, yeah.
Right, with Jim smoking in front of David. And then also people checking out their hair. You can't see this because this is audio, but I'm going to show for Dustin. Everyone's doing this, like kind of smushing their bangs a little bit.
Zach's making a smushing motion in the front. Rick Moranis especially, I feel like, was doing that.
Oh, yeah. There's like a lot of hair play in this movie.
Yeah,
hair play, I guess, was big in the
80s.
Yeah. And but then going back to my original point, the slang. I think slang organically comes about. However, I think there's times when people try to force something down your throat, whether it be gag me with a spoon or bitchin'. But in this case, I feel like this movie really tried to get everyone saying it's casual. It's casual.
Well, right. Because like that, I mean, that's Chris Penn's catchphrase. I agree with you 100%. It's so... It's almost like the equivalent of what a hashtag would be now, like we want this to trend. We want this to trend, but it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's not a phrase. It's casual. Like, he's just responding to, like, you know, I don't know the exact dialogue that happens, but I'm like, that is not something you would say as a response to that.
I think there's like four or five moments when he uses it in the movie.
It's like a drinking game. Every time he says,
yeah, it is a total drinking game. The first one is when he's in the liquor store, and after he reveals to the guy that he banged his sister, the guy's like, I'm not selling you alcohol. And he's like, it's casual. Like, no big deal. Whatever. Yep. And then when, Eileen refuses to get married to him, it's casual. And then a couple other, those are two specifics that I can think of.
Well, he gets punched in the face in the strip club.
Oh, yes,
and it ends, because it's used a lot of times to end the scene in a very like kind of sitcom-y way, where it's always like, it's casual. And like in this one, he gets punched in the face, like, it's casual, you know, falls down. You're like, that's the end of the scene. Cut. Yep. It's used a lot.
It's casual. It's casual. It's casual. It's casual.
It's casual.
It's casual.
I really like, I think I said it in another episode. I know I did. I said something's very choice I like that personally for myself, but I would not try to get people to say it. It's casual. I think I tried to use it back in the day and it wasn't effective. Like it wasn't funny. And it flatlined.
It's confusing. It's confusing because you're like, what do you mean? What's casual? What, you know, if you're not talking about a casual relationship, it doesn't make any sense. Or like, you know, we have a very casual, it's just casual. Like the equivalent of like no big deal or something.
No, but and I think that's, you just reminded me of one that I used to despise as a kid. The term bad. Oh, that's so bad. That's so bad. I'm like, what do you mean that's so bad?
Like
that is bad. That is not good. Is it short for badass, right. I guess? But I would be like, bad is not good. It doesn't make sense. Or then people would say, oh, that's so dope. And I'm like, dope is not good. Like, is it? No, it doesn't make sense.
No, there's a lot of like, you know, regional phrasings that, like Boston, like wicked, that's wicked.
Wicked.
It's like wicked.
Or savage. Savage is so popular now. Oh, that's so savage. Or that is so sick. And I'm just like, is it really? Is sick a good? I don't want to be sick. Do you?
I like sick. That's when it's kind of gross, but kind of awesome. You know, sick.
So if our audience out there can start using it's casual in a very organic way, and we get that trending again,
Hashtag that would it's be casual.
Pretty. That would be pretty dope. That'd be pretty bad.
You know, you said to me recently something like, you were like, nostalgia is one hell of a drug.
Yes.
You know, and you were saying in a relationship to Hardball, the TV show, because I was
Boy
like,
Richard
I watched
Tyson,
it. And I
RT.
Yeah. I said it. You know, I watched it recently, and I was like, this is not good. But how how it is, like you think back and like, that's really cool. Nostalgia made me think that Chris Penn's character was kind of cool back in the day. Now I'm looking at it, I'm like, he's an ass. Just a total, like you would not want to be friends with him.
It's casual.
By the way, another cameo. Did you recognize the cable guy?
Not like in any specific way. I was like, this guy's been in a thousand things.
Well, his name's Lee Ving, and he was in a punk band called Fear in the 80s.
He's always like a mobster or something, right?
Yeah,
he's like
he was in Streets of Fire. He was great in
Streets
of Fire.
Yeah, Streets of Fire.
Oh, so great. But he worked as a singing waiter at the same restaurant as Robert Romanus did back in the day.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
That's crazy. In LA.
Okay. So, and referenced on your episode.
Yes. So if you haven't listened to that, go back. And speaking of which, because I know we probably have a lot of new listeners to our program because of our amazing Matt Adler interview, which everyone has loved and showered us with love. Thank you very much. If you haven't checked out our previous episodes, they're really good. Dig a little deeper into our catalog and you might find something you like. Kind of like this movie. You know, the wildlife would have just been forgotten if people hadn't dug a little bit deeper. And we're digging a little bit deeper.
Right. So if you were going to promote some episodes that we've done, for example, what would you say people watch other than just be like,
I mean, specifically, I think people should listen to the Fast Times episode we did with your brother, first of all. I think the Robert Romanus follow-up is equally gold, even though you're not there. And there's a backstory to that, which you'll hear in the episode, so you should listen to it. But I think our Mitch Gaylord episode, which was one of our first ones we ever did, is really strong. Those are just a couple for me. How about you? What are some episodes that you would say?
Certainly Eric Roberts, I think, is paramount. You just have to just go and listen to that one. Diane Franklin,
She's
Zach
so great.
Ward. I mean, there's just a lot of great ones. I just didn't
want to. And that Zach Ward interview is not your typical interview in a good way.
No, not suitable for work at home.
I mean, John Philbin's interview that we did with him is a trip, and you should definitely listen to that. You know, our show, we're coming up on our 1 year anniversary, which is very exciting.
Yes.
We started Little Engine That Could about a year ago and have had a tremendous amount of fun doing it. So thank you. Just quick shout out to all you listeners and subscribers and followers and all that stuff.
Really support it. Really appreciate your support. That's the phrase I want.
Yeah, we really do. And the offer still stands. If you I'm going to tack on a little bit of a caveat. If you follow us on Spotify and or subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and a review, it's easier to go on Spotify, but just let us know you did. And we'll wait until we see the number go up. Click. Takes a couple days. We'll send you out a mix CD. It's all the music you know and love from the 80s and some you've never heard.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's, I'm done with our little plug. I just had to throw that in.
I mean, that's really the best deal you could probably find in America right now. You honestly, you go and you write a little review and you put 5 stars. This is like the opposite of those telethons on NPR. You know, but really, like, you do nothing other than put in a little effort and a little love to the podcast, and then Zach hand mails with love his special $2 Leafy package for the true fans.
And also thank you for all the comments you guys always give us and support. You know, we do this because we love it. It's not because we're getting paid to. It's because it's fun. And we hope that we're bringing you a little bit of joy in these times that are very uncertain and scary. So for an hour or so to just laugh and reminisce, that's the whole point of what we're doing.
Well said.
Speaking of reminiscing, we can't end the episode without talking a little bit about 1984, the movie the year came out. We have an upcoming episode later on this year with our good buddy Diallo Jackson, where we talk about Red Dawn, which is also a 1984 movie. So we'll just hit up a couple things.
Just the most depressing shit. Just get that out of the way.
Yeah, it's the most depressing episode, but it's entertaining nevertheless. I mean,
no, look, I just mean that you, if you start with the depressing facts from 1984, that's all I'm saying.
Oh, you want a depressing fact?
Yeah, we can just do the positive ones later when we're talking about Red Dawn.
Okay, I'll jump into that. Okay, so Andy Kaufman died in 1984.
Okay, that's terrible.
And then Vanessa Williams had to relinquish her crown for being the first Black Miss America due to her spread in Penthouse magazine.
Oh, God, yeah, that's...
And just such... You think about it now, dude. You think about contextually now.
Yeah.
The way things happen and, you know, what is it called? Cancel culture, where like minute you do something, the minute you do something that is left of center, you're just, or right of center, you're thrown out with the trash. And Vanessa Williams, thank God, has had a positive career after that. You know, but nowadays that might have destroyed her career. Who knows? It's just so odd. 1984, yeah, we're talking almost 40 years ago. Things were different back then, folks. And so, you know, Where's the Beef was one of the number one taglines of 1984. So if that gives you any trajectory, I think nowadays they would say, Where's the Impossible Beef? Because I'm a big fan of Impossible Burgers. Just throwing it out there.
Well, but wasn't the... I don't. I'll just leave it at that.
And a couple movies. Breakin'. I know you love Breakin'. Came out in 1984. Also.
I do love Breakin'. I love Breakin' 2 a little bit better, but
that's a hot take right there. Not too many people say that.
I don't feel like anybody talks about Breakin' at all.
They should.
Yeah. I don't know. It's disappointing.
And a movie I'll full confession, I've never seen. Footloose came out in 1984.
Right. So you've never seen Footloose and you've never seen Dirty Dancing. That's, yeah.
And I never saw Pretty Woman and I never saw Pretty in Pink. Never saw Pretty in Pink.
So any pretty in the title, you're like, I don't do that.
Yeah, anything that...
I've got camo pants on. I don't have time for pretty movies.
Yeah, it was too much like Jim, I guess.
yeah. Yeah.
I do love... Maybe we'll... This is a nice button on our episode in regards to the wildlife. Overall, by the way, would you recommend Wildlife to people for them to seek it out?
I don't know. I, You know, I think overall, I certainly, there's a lot that I enjoyed about it.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I should put a caveat on that. I would recommend it to people who love the 80s as much as we do.
Yes.
And that's really it. Because otherwise, it's like, I'm not recommending this to, you know, hey, mom and dad, check out the wildlife. You know, it's not one of those movies that, you know, I left feeling like, oh, awesome. It doesn't feel like a message of awesome youth. Here's what I'll say. Here's how I'll wrap it up. At the very end of the movie, Tommy, Chris Penn's character, is talking to Eric Stoltz. And Eric Stoltz is really mad because he's just been kicked out of his apartment like a week after getting into it because of Tommy. It's Tommy's fault. But Tommy says to him, no, man, you just threw the biggest party of the year. You are a legendary, I'm paraphrasing, but you are a legendary person. Everyone will remember that Bill Conrad's party happened today, and no one will ever forget this. And so you're basically a hero. And Eric Stoltz seems to like contemplate that, and he's like, huh, well, I guess you're right. Like, that's kind of okay, cool. But then he still has no apartment, and he has, you know, like his
and
life.
He's got to pay back all that.
Yes,
the money
and
for...
he's being sued. For this party that he was not allowed to have, and destroyed everything. You know, the furniture's in the pool. You know, it's one of those classic pizza on the record player kind of a parties.
Yeah.
But that sort of sentiment of like, here's what good comes out of this. That's kind of how I felt about the movie in a way, where I was like, okay, yeah, I feel like there's that, but I don't know that I would recommend it to everybody.
Well, I'm going to go one step further, and I'm going to say, before I go one step further, I want to throw it, cause I teased this in the beginning of the episode. There's one other little real genius connection. There's a scene in Fashion Galaxy where this guy's trying on a jacket. It's ugly as F. And Rick Moranis' character, Harry, is wearing the same jacket. And he's like, oh, it's a great jacket. You should get it. It's a really funny exchange. And then Tommy comes up and ruins the whole thing. The guy wearing the jacket is in Real Genius as well. His name's Bodhi in Real Genius. And he's one of the main, like, antagonist nerds. He's a part of Kent's crew.
Yeah.
Who gives himself shock treatments. And then of course, the professor has the great line, you know, oh, up the voltage or something like that, you know? So, I see why you would be hesitant to recommend this. I would recommend it wholeheartedly with the caveat that these movies are flawed and it is darker. It's no Fast Times at all. And again, I think this, like I said earlier, it would make a great TV pilot for a series. It just sets up, it's a nice setup to like, what's going to happen next with all these characters. I want to know, is Bill going to have a lawsuit that he's going to deal with? Is he going to stay with Anita? Is Eileen going to finally dump Tommy? Like, what, all these things. And then going back to Jim, who does have a cool little story arc. I feel like it could have been more developed. You know, he goes off to school. He sees the girl that the week leading up to school starting, he sees the girl that he has a crush on from the bowling alley at school. They have an exchange. Feels like things are going to be okay. He's got a smile on his face, kind of new attitude. And then the marquee of the high school, the little, you know, news and announcements that's usually on the outside of the high school.
Yeah.
It says, the future is up to you. And I like that. And not to get like cheese ball-y or whatever, but that's pretty fucking true about everything in this world. That we are the ones to decide really what happens next if we all band together and if we all work together and if we all love each other and we all do the things necessary to make this world a better place.
Yeah, that's very positive.
Because that's who I am, damn it.
Yeah, no, I think that's... Don't ever change. If this was a yearbook, that's what I read in your yearbook.
Would you quote In Excess? Because that's a great In Excess song. Don't change, by the way.
Don't change. Yeah. No, I probably wouldn't. But I think think that's a very nice sentiment. I didn't get any of that from this, but I think it's
great.
Of
course not.
No, but I think it's great. Yeah, no, I think at the end of the day, I was just very annoyed with Tommy.
It's casual.
So there you go. As always, thank you guys for listening to the show. We love you. And thanks for being big support. Dustin, you wanna say anything?
I would like to echo those sentiments and don't watch The Wildlife. Good night.
How dare you?
All right, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a four...
Is it 5-star rating?
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. We really... Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's great too. And you can find us on the internet. Don't forget to check out our website at $2LateFee.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at $2 Late Fee Podcast. We'll see you next time.
We did it.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.